Hello, and welcome to the G&J Show. I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Jocelyn. As married couples, we all want strong marriages and healthy families. But what can we do to be that couple and family we've always dreamed to be?
Our show is dedicated to helping you improve your marriage, strengthen your family, and encourage you to live your best life.
We discuss practical resources and books and have conversations with other couples to find winning strategies and methods for your marriage and family.
Today, we're going to talk about the book, The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman, and how understanding your love language can have a massive impact on your marriage. All right, let's dive in. We all want to be loved, but more specifically, we want to feel loved. Gary Chapman, in his book, The Five Love Languages, which I mentioned earlier, makes an important point that with feeling love, some of us feel love differently. Different things make us feel loved, and we express love in different ways. For example, a couple that's been together for several years, one may cook and clean regularly and thinks that the other person, their partner, will feel loved by the fact that they're cooking and cleaning and doing all these chores around the house, whereas the other one actually just wants to spend time together and may feel upset or annoyed that the other person's always busy trying to do chores when all they want to do is feel loved. And the other person thinks that because I'm doing all these chores, that person will feel loved. So there's a disconnect, and it's not a disconnect of maliciousness. It's just a disconnect of lack of understanding of each other. So we're going to talk today about the five different types of love languages, how to identify your love language, and try to pull out practical ways that you can help yourself and your partner, or basically how you can help your partner feel more loved, and in turn, ideally, feel more loved by your partner, and just this will help your relationship, because if you're feeling loved, you're more willing to go that extra step for your relationship.
Right. And even beyond that, I found discussing the five love languages and discovering my primary love language. Actually, we had done this before. We did this when we were engaged or we were dating, and we figured out what our love language was then. But actually, it wasn't accurate. It wasn't correct, because once you step into marriage and I don't know, the rubber hits the road and you really have to work hard and dig deep. I think that's when you really discover for yourself, it's that self-knowledge, what really you need in order to feel loved from your spouse. And so the other thing I want to add, and this is kind of my new revelation since reading this book, is that not only recognizing your primary love language helps you, it doesn't just help you love your spouse better or understand how you're loved by your spouse, but also helps you love yourself better. So if you're, for example, well, we'll get into it later, if your primary love language is gifts, which is one thing that we were discussing, it's also important for yourself to buy yourself some things or to do things for yourself. I don't know, like, for example, personal acts of service or quality time, taking a bath. So feeling, you can fill your own love tank. You can also fill your spouse's love tank. You can also help your spouse fill your love tank. Mm-hmm. I think all those things are part of it.
Yeah, because self-love is something that is talked about a lot, but I think very few of us actually do well and do properly.
And sometimes we feel like we don't deserve it, or we don't know how to love ourselves.
For sure.
I feel like it's been really helpful just to look at this. And sometimes actually our areas of greatest sensitivity are actually our greatest need. And sometimes it comes out as criticism in the other person. So for example, if I'm criticizing always the way that you do things, or why aren't you doing things for me? Like, my primary love language might be acts of service, because it matters to me. Like, that's something that really matters to me. Or you find your spouse is really sensitive about your love life. I don't know, what's an example? The person seems cold and withdrawn. Are they cold and withdrawn because they don't want to make love? Well, it could also be because they're hurt because the other is not showing responsiveness to physical affection, and they're withdrawing in order to protect their most vulnerable center.
Mm-hmm. So before we really dive in to really get the most out of this podcast, we do strongly recommend that you take the five love languages quiz. And for that, which is online, and we have a link to the quiz in our show notes for this podcast episode.
Free.
So you have no excuses not to do it.
It's actually also really useful. Like, we thought we could just go through the book or just kind of like figure out like, oh, these are the five love languages. I think this is my top one. I think this is your top one. And we were pretty like, we were agreed between the two of us, like which ones were our top ones. But then when we took the quiz and what do they say? Split hairs between like, this is better, this is not better. It helped us understand the hierarchy of our love languages.
Mm-hmm. And so the quiz is online. We also have a link to the book on Amazon. It is an affiliate link. Affiliate links are how we help fund this little personal project that we're doing. So the way it works is if you buy the book from Amazon off the link that we provide you, we get a very, very small kickback from that. And it just helps us make sure that this podcast sounds great and that we can continue to invest in investing in you. Yeah. Take the quiz, buy the book, and let's dive into the meat of this.
Right. So we're just going to go through the five love languages. We're going to comment and we're going to summarize Chapman's main points. And then we're also going to discuss in terms of real life examples, what that looks like. And also just as a caveat, like the way that we describe it, the five love languages are deep and broad and vast. And just as much as it takes a long time to get to know the English language, it takes a long time to get to know these five love languages. And definitely we'll just be scraping the surface here.
Yeah. And the other point to make with that is your love languages, your love language and your spouse's love language is unique. So that like every person has a very unique dialect and unique flavor of different love languages. So what we're going to be talking about is very much a starting point. It can make a really big difference, but you won't really become an expert in your partner's love language until you start to invest in it.
Right.
And you start to explore it. So that's our little caveat. You're not going to be an expert just by listening to this 30 or 40 minute podcast. It's going to take work.
Hopefully it'll be a starting point.
the starting of an amazing journey of love.
Yeah, it creates some really interesting conversations. Gary and I actually did a date day. We try to do a date day, day, like, well, at least once a year, and usually around Christmas time when our parents can watch the kids. And we actually just discussed the five love languages throughout the day, and it was the topic of quite a lot of interesting and varied conversations.
Yeah, I think we both learned a lot about each other, and we learned a lot about ourselves in the process. Because, yeah, we think, as Jocelyn alluded to earlier, we had a few misconceptions about what our love languages were.
And about each other. It was really interesting. Anyway, now that the anticipation has built up. So let's start with the first love language. The first love language that Dr. Chapman mentions is words of affirmation. What does this mean? Words affect you deeply, whether positive or negative. You might like to have experiences expressed in words, either told to you verbally, I loved it when you did X, or written down in a note. You want to hear I love you and other endearing phrases. And Gare mentioned dialects. So dialects are variations on a love language. So for example, two people like within a relationship might have words of affirmation as their primary love language, but they might do it differently and still speak past each other. Yay, yes. The complexities. So for example, in terms of words of affirmation, like even between the two of us, like I'm more of an auditory person. I'm more affected by auditory language. Mm-hmm. And then you're more of a written visual person. So you're more affected by written visual language. So written notes.
I guess I'd say I'm more physical than.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get
into that.
So for myself, I like to hear things. I like to hear experiences reiterated after the experience about how much my spouse enjoyed it, about how we felt, and just recreating experiences and words. And so here are some other examples of aspects of this love language. So for example, encouraging words. That could be a response to projects and dreams. Like you want to hear from your spouse encouraging words. You want to hear it in their tone of voice. You want to hear it in the time maybe they take to listen and to talk about what your goal or your dream is. And for example, like you might have had a dream to, write a book and you're really affected by other people's criticism, and that has stopped you in the past, but you have one voice saying, keep going, you've got it. And that encouragement gets you out there, gets your work out there. So there's encouraging words. There's also kind words. So here we're talking about tone. And that would be, you're really sensitive to how people say things. You're really sensitive to especially negative words. Maybe you have a real aversion to swearing, for example. Swearing in the home, or mean words between your children. Another interesting point was humble words. For example, your spouse speaking to you as an equal and not in a condescending way. And I've been thinking about this since we read it, but this idea of requesting and not demanding. So yeah, that's a few points too.
Yeah. And those points, encouraging words, humble words, those are different dialects. So if you take the quiz and you realize, okay, my love language is words of affirmation, you might gravitate towards one dialect over another.
Right.
So just a little comment on that there. The next love language that we're going to talk about is quality time. So quality time really is like, you want attention. You want the attention of your spouse and time with your spouse doing something meaningful that builds memories or allows your relationship to deepen. And it doesn't necessarily, the activity may not be as important as the time spent. And that's really like, it's spending time with each other. So quality time means you might get irritated by your spouse's distraction, for example, on their cell phone or with work, or a lack of eye contact during a conversation. If quality time is your love language, you really need your undivided attention to fill your love tank. You like to show your love by being a good listener, by organizing special dates, by enjoying sports and hobbies or books together. So it's really about spending time together, doing something meaningful to the both of you. So dialects of this love language include togetherness. So basically, you just want to be like, this dialect is, you just want to be together with the other person doing something. So you're like, you're both engaged. There's no distractions, like the cell phones are away, and you have your undivided attention on each other and the task at hand. So this could be something as simple as working on like doing house chores together. So for someone who has this dialect, an easy way to fill the tank would be to, if you know this is of your partner, and you know they're like more project-y oriented, it could be as simple as like, hey, let's tidy the house together. And then rather than each run off and do tidy separate rooms, work on the same room together. This is a simple example of how you can build togetherness. The second dialect would be quality conversation. So a couple of key points with this one. It's not just any conversation where you're distracted. Again, it very similar. Like, these are all dialects, so a lot of the underlying fundamentals are all the same. But if quality conversation is your dialect, it's really important that it's a deep and quality conversation where you're really communicating a lot between the two people. So like, eye contact is an important thing. There's no other activity. So unlike togetherness, where you just want to be together and doing an activity together, quality conversation is like, the activity is the conversation. Like, you're not making supper, you're not taking care of the kids, you're not fiddling on your cell phone. Like, there's no other activity. And an important one with quality conversation is to really aim to listen for feelings, particularly if you're the husband. Feelings may seem like it's a foreign territory for you, but you really want to practice listening for feelings, because this it's not just a transfer of information, or it is a transfer of information, but the feelings are part of that information transfer. It's not just more of a robotic, I'm uploading data from me to you and then you to me, and then once the transfer is complete, the conversation's over. Think of feelings as part of that data, and you really want to listen for it, because that's where a lot of the nuggets can be hiding. Another thing with this is like, just be aware of your body language. If you're partner's love, or your, if your love language is quality time and quality conversation, you want to make sure that your body language reflects the fact that you're open, you're interested, you're engaged with them. Because I think there's a number of studies that show that the majority of the communications that happens between people is nonverbal. So you want to make sure that your nonverbal cues are in line with the verbal cues that you're saying. And then a final thing with this may sound like just good manners, but don't interrupt the other person. Like when they're communicating,
like interrupt right now.
When they're communicating, allow them their space to talk. And then when they're done, then you respond. Again, this is a quality conversation and we need to listen and truly make time to allow the person to talk.
Yeah, and it takes time. I just interrupted you. I think there's small interruptions that are acceptable. That's what I'll go with.
Mm-hmm. And then the final conversation or the final dialect of quality time is quality activities. So unlike the quality conversation where the conversation is the most important thing, this one is quality activities. So it's really doing activities together that are meaningful for both person, and it's that shared activity.
Yeah, for example, like the other spouse likes baseball, so you go to the baseball game with them. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily something practical, and maybe you have to spend some money for it, but and maybe you don't even like baseball, but the idea that you're willing to go with your spouse is meaningful to the spouse whose quality time is their main love language.
Mm-hmm. And with all of this, unless you're married to someone or you're in a relationship with someone whose love language is very similarly mirror yours, mm-hmm. There's going to be an element of sacrifice in all of this for all of us. And in the same way that we sacrifice a lot for our careers or financial investments, knowing that, okay, if I don't buy a Starbucks latte every week, but instead I invest that money, 5 years down the road, I'll be much more financially secure. Think of these as sacrifices towards your investment in your relationship.
Right, right.
It's a small sacrifice now, but 5 years down the road, your relationship's going to be so much better for it.
For sure.
It's a net win all around. All right, Joss.
Okay, this third love language, I actually didn't really take very seriously, and I thought it was kind of ridiculous, which isn't very fair, but it's called receiving gifts. And also because I am of a saver mentality and
very much a minimalist.
Get rid of the excess things, but maybe more in a Marie Kimono kind of way. For receiving gifts, I thought it was maybe just kind of superficial, people who just didn't know about love. That's pretty harsh for me to say. But recently we've discovered that Gare, not his top love language, but one of like the top, second one, top love language, because there's a hierarchy, right? For me, it's at the bottom. Maybe that's why I wasn't taking it seriously, which is something interesting to think about. But I realized that it was something that was important to him, and it wasn't something superficial. And I just gave it a little bit more thought. So here's kind of my take on Chapman's receiving gifts. Receiving gifts means that tangible things are meaningful to you. You express your love through physical objects, not with memories that can be easily forgotten. This is something that Gare helped me understand, because he said, for example, that he doesn't want, for example, to have an experience gift because he'll forget about it.
My memory is selectively terrible.
But if he has an object, then every time he looks at an object, he can remember the person who gave it. And so I was like, oh, okay, I see what that means.
My memory is selectively terrible.
But objects remind you. So if your primary love language is receiving gifts, or one of your top love languages is receiving gifts, you like to identify things that your partner wants or dreams about. And you want to get those things maybe for them in order to show your special love for them. You value birthdays and Christmas. Another example that I'm thinking of is a girl who I knew in high school who bought her boyfriend, oh my gosh, like it was an extremely expensive jacket for Christmas. Maybe it cost her $600, which seems ludicrous. But in her mind, if she spent a lot of money on a gift, it would really show her loved one how much she cared. And how much the relationship mattered to her. So, I mean, that's kind of extreme, but I think it has something to do with the receiving gifts in my head. Maybe my saver head, it's a little extreme. Anyway, so if you like receiving gifts, you like it when your spouse returns from a long trip with a souvenir and you know through this souvenir that they have been thinking of you. So I mentioned this love language might be harder for the saver type. And there's definitely been a tension between the two of us. Gary likes to get me gifts. He likes to get himself gifts.
I get everybody gifts. You get a gift. You get a gift. You get a gift.
It's too much. In my head, I'm like, why are you spending money uselessly, like on unpractical things? As much as I love flowers, sometimes it crosses my head and like, how much does that cost? You know, but I don't say that because I like the flowers and I want to keep getting them, but it does cross my mind. So one way that Dr. Chapman talks about it is that when you buy gifts for your spouse and you show your spouse through these gifts, you love them, you're investing in your relationship. So why do we save money, right? Like we save money in order to have money for the things that we need. What are the things that we need? We need food, we need a house, we need electricity, we need other practical objects, clothing. But we also need a really good relationship, and it's okay to put money into the relationship too. And that it is one of the, if I can put it in my categorical brain, it's one of the budgeting categories that you can just make a category for your relationship. You can just include it in your budgeting plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And unlike a lot of the other material things that we often save for and strive for, your relationship should and hopefully will last you the rest of your life. So why not invest?
Absolutely.
Why not invest more into the thing that will never go away?
In a good way. And for you, Gary, I know that's been like, for example, like just getting you a beer on a Friday to say like, good job working this week or something like that. Or a note in your suitcase when you go on a trip. Like it doesn't have to necessarily cost money. But then this is another thing I've been thinking about. Gifts, it, like at the very base is charity. But like charity that costs something. And the cost could be money. But the cost could also be time. The cost could be effort. So it's the idea of doing something for the other that costs you something. So Gary, you were mentioning something about a sacrifice before. And I think the whole idea of receiving gifts is seeing that tangible sacrifice that somebody is making for you.
Mm-hmm.
So here's some other examples that Dr. Chapman talks about are gift of self. Like in a marriage, the love act is a gift in the grandest sense.
Mm-hmm. By which you mean lovemaking or sex?
Which is both. I mean both.
Yeah, it's true.
I think I remember somebody saying the first time she kissed her now husband, it struck her how much that kiss was a gift. And I think in that sense, that's another level of gift, right? Like of giving love. And there's also the gift of presence. We talked about the baseball game. If you know that your spouse hates baseball, but is willing to go to the baseball game with you, you recognize the sacrifice and it's a gift. I think it's just, if we make it that simple, again, it's a gift of time. If you, I remember somebody sitting down and rereading my research paper, which was 40 pages long, like taking an entire afternoon to do that. And for me, it was like, wow, what a gift of time. And that was meaningful to me. So one thing that Dr. Chapman recommends that if you think your spouse has the primary love language of receiving gifts, you can just, trial and error it. You can try for a week giving your spouse a gift every day and seeing what happens to your spouse by the end of the week. It could be a fun little game. And again, it's time and energy as well.
Alrighty. So the next love language that we're going to talk about is acts of service. So in acts of service, you really seek to please through serving the other by noticing needs before the other even asks to do them and then set out and fulfill that need. You want to make life easier for your spouse. You want to make life easier and more pleasant for your spouse by doing things. So this is very action oriented. And it's in some ways it can sound similar to the quality time and quality activities, but this one is not so much concerned as the time spent together with your partner, but in the action of doing something for your partner. So this, like you may enjoy projects together, and this really can come across, this really can come out in, like if acts of service is your love language, you will be really touched and pleased when you notice that your partner like tidies up the dishes, puts the kids to bed, like does things both to help you, but also to help, like just does things for the marriage and does things for the family. You also are likely someone who's going to go out of your way to do things for your spouse. So for example, if your wife is had a rough day with the kids at home, you come home from work and you notice that like she's just kind of at her limit and the kids are bonkers. If your love language is acts of service, you'll naturally want to reach out, you know, either take the kids or to give her a break, some time away, and then make a special effort after dinner to maybe tidy up, put the dishes away, clean the kitchen, clean the counter, wipe the table down, do all of that.
Sounds nice.
And that's how you will that's how you'll naturally communicate love to that person. Now, if their love language is not acts of service, they might not receive it in the same way that you're trying to give it, but that's really at the heart of acts of service.
Right.
It's you're doing things for the other. If your love language is acts of service and your partner does not have acts of service very high, then you're someone who also like, if those things don't get done, you'll get very concerned and you'll start to question like, do they not care? Like, do they not care about us? Do they not care about me? Do they not care about our relationship? And then the red flags start to go off. So just some quick little ways on to try to help you understand what this love language looks like, but then also how to recognize it. Two dialects with this is, or two pointers for this is, if your love language is acts of service and your partner's is not, and they're trying to figure out, okay, how do I do the acts of service thing? Mm-hmm. Let your spouse make mistakes in trying to help you.
Right. Like if, you know how to do laundry pretty well, but for example, if you didn't know how to do the laundry and my love language was acts of service and I would let you do the laundry and mess up and maybe pour bleach into our clothing.
Yeah. Pour bleach. That'd be pretty bad.
That'd be kind of scary.
If I'm not good at, if I'm not good at laundry and Jocelyn's thing is acts of service and I do the laundry, like, and I don't fold it properly afterwards, or it's just a giant pile in the laundry basket. For the person whose love language is acts of service, like allow your partner, like give your partner the benefit of the doubt as they're trying, and just help encourage them and affirm them. Because if the demand is acts of service in perfection, you're going to do more harm to your relationship.
Yeah. Because it's not so much like how well your spouse does it necessarily, but it's the fact that they did go about and do it. And the more encouragement they receive, the better they get. I think it's just like, it's like with anything. I know, like, for example, like one thing is tidying up. I love tidying up. Gerhardt doesn't notice when things are on the floor sometimes.
I'm dirt blind.
But when you tidy up, I comment on it. And even if it's not done perfectly, it doesn't matter. And now I see you doing it just even if I'm not seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Out of habit now. And the one thing with the acts of service is different acts will speak more loudly to your partner than others. So if your partner's love language is acts of service, try a variety of things and then try to notice what sticks, what doesn't. Right. And even have your, like if your partner, like if this is the love languages or a joint project the two of you are embarking on, try a variety of things and then check in with your spouse. Like, hey, how did you feel about me like taking the car in to get fixed for you without you needing to ask?
Yeah,
or
just ask.
How did me watching the kids like,
or what would you prefer if I watch the kids right now or if I clean the kitchen?
Yeah. Cause they should have a sense of what will resonate the most strongly with them. And what we really want to do is try to find that point of greatest resonance and then like keep hitting that button.
Absolutely. Like I just think of like my parents, for example. I think it's probably my mom who's acts of service, but she's like always doing things. And one thing that really brings my parents together are common projects. So for example, they have this like massive boat that somebody gave them that needs a lot of repairs. And both of them are enjoying so much like working on the boat project together. And I don't even think my mom has sea legs, but it's besides the point. Like, I don't know how much she cares about boats really, but like the fact that they can work on this project together has brought their relationship closer, even after 30 years.
Mm-hmm. The power of the love languages. All right. So Joss, you can bring her home with the final
love
one.
Language. Okay. This is one you've been waiting for. It's physical touch. Let's get uncomfortable. So, you know, your spouse's love language, or, you know, your own love language is primarily physical touch, when everything is okay, when your spouse goes out of their way to kiss and to touch you throughout the day. You like to be physically close to the other. You crave physical intimacy, maybe frequently, to get back on the same page, as you describe it, or to renew your love. You are sensitive to different kinds of touch, so it doesn't necessarily need to be sexual. It can be, you have a whole body. There's lots of ways of showing physical affection. You find it perhaps particularly hard if your spouse is away for a conference or isn't within physical proximity. Well, I should maybe caveat that. Like, your spouse doesn't need to be like right beside you, but the fact that your spouse is physically present is meaningful to you. So I guess it's important to say that on the topic of sex specifically, and a feeling of security, there's definitely obviously a lot of baggage connected with that. And I think that's why people get a little bit weary of maybe the fact that this is a love language. I mean, obviously it is a love language. Marriage, I mean, basically requires it. But I think there is a lot of hurt around sometimes physical touch. And so even if that is your love language, or it is your spouse's love language, there might've been some brokenness in their past that makes it difficult for them to express it in a way that's beautiful and meaningful. And I think it's important to be patient with the other, and also work through those difficulties, counseling if necessary, but especially if that's an important area and it's causing you trauma for whatever reason, like it's definitely something that needs to be checked out. So the sense of, on the one hand, like you think maybe, for example, that your spouse is asking for too much physical affection and you're like touched out, as some people talk about, like, I don't know, you've just had a baby, maybe you've just had twins, and those like twins are like all over you all the time. As a woman, you know, like you're breastfeeding and these kids need you all the time, and all of a sudden your husband needs you. It's like, what the heck? Like, how do you make that space? So definitely
back off, monster.
I think in those circumstances it's important to be delicate with the spouse who needs the physical affection for good reason, and it's not because they're being selfish. I think that's good to point out. I think the idea of not belittling the spouse who has those needs for physical affection is really important. But also on the other hand, and on the other end of the spectrum, it's also important not to be a doormat, you know. And in that sense, I mean, like, yeah, you have needs, your spouse has needs, and it's about finding compromise, something that works for the two of you. Maybe it's something that you need to talk about out loud, talk about your love life out loud. What do you think, Gary?
Yeah, sounds good.
So if your spouse's love language is physical touch, it's important to show responsiveness to touch. And then there are different dialects of touch. There are different, I think one terrible statistic that I heard when I was in Russia was most people divorce because they like to have, they have like different ideas of what their sex life should be. It's like, seems kind of odd and like that they can't agree on it. But I think it's an important point. So there are different dialects of touch, and it's important to talk about and not to be like ashamed, not to, maybe it's uncomfortable, but I think it's good to talk about. And then within that, because I think physical touch, is so intimate, especially sexual intimacy, the idea of marriage exclusivity is going to be an especially sensitive topic to that spouse whose physical, whose primary love language is physical touch.
And what do you mean by marriage exclusivity?
Oh, I mean like not having affairs, also being like careful about how you touch other people in public in front of your spouse.
Mm-hmm. So no butt grabbing your friends.
Obviously. Here's some different expressions of physical touch.
I've now been banned from the podcast.
Inappropriate. Holding hands in public, for example, cuddling, hugs. Again, you can learn about sex. You can read about it. There are some decent books out there. Another thing you can do if you're really not in the mood, but you recognize that your spouse needs a physical affection, massage is a good way to show love as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you looking at me like that?
An inappropriate comment was censored.
Good. So those are the five love languages. And I think one question that we can just discuss before we close up is how has it helped us? Like, why is it helpful to know the five love languages?
I think my answer from this will come from our date day together, in that we were reading this book and we'd taken the love languages test before while we were dating. And when we took it again, it really helped reinforce some things changed.
Yeah. For sure.
So for me, my top love language is physical touch. And then my second one is receiving gifts.
Yeah. Which we didn't know.
Which I kind of buried because,
again, like brokenness is a part of the picture
for
too,
sure.
Right?
And, so it was really helpful for me to learn like, okay, these are mine. It's not, I'm not being weird by kind of demanding mm-hmm. more of these,
mm-hmm.
Within reason, of course. Like you don't want to dominate your spouse. But it is, you know, it's reasonable for me to need and demand these. But the other interesting revelation that struck me was that the love language is both external, but it's also internal in terms of, you know, physical touch is my love language. I've always been very active and very into sports.
Right,
and
right.
For me, if I don't get my workouts in, not only does it help me manage stress, but if I'm not exercising regularly, I feel worse about myself, which I think is just one of the side effects of not exercising. But I think in a particular for those of us with physical touch, for me, not exercising, when I exercise, I show myself that I care about myself.
Right.
I show myself that I love myself.
You become more self-confident.
Yeah, even. More self-confident. And it's self-love, because I think a lot of us, you know, we talk about, oh, yeah, love yourself. And I think we do in a very immature and pandering way, but the operating out of this, like taking care of myself and just like not being ashamed or embarrassed to go, like if if I knocked it out of the park for a project at work and like really exceeded expectations, that it's not, you know, like going out and getting myself a little reward for doing that,
right,
is a good thing. It helps me build account. It helps me build trust with myself, but it also helps me to love myself. And so the self-love component was a real revelation for me.
It makes me think of Jordan Peterson. He's like, just give yourself the damn espresso.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, if you're dangling a carrot in front of yourself, like give yourself the carrot if that's important to you.
Yeah. So that's one thing that was those were the big things that really struck me in the love languages day to day. I know it's very like self-focused, but for me, it was a real light bulb moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's legitimate. I mean, like if we recognize what our own needs are, it's easier for us to express them to others. And if we can fill our love tank, we're not going to be, how do I say, emotionally demanding on our spouse in a way that's kind of like inhuman.
Yeah. And I don't think we can ever fill our own love tanks ourselves.
Right. Right. We need the other. All.
We need another person. But if we can, like, we all have only very limited time in a day, particularly if you're married with kids and you're trying to hold down a job, like your time for yourself is very limited. Mm-hmm. But if you recognize what your love languages are, you can help direct your recreational activities in a way that you help feed yourself in a way that you respond to.
Yeah. Yeah. You take that time to yourself in a way that is meaningful to you, that builds you up in a particular way.
Mm-hmm. So Joss, how would you answer the question?
I think I have a similar answer. Like I thought I had a different top love language when we were dating. And also it's like, sometimes it does, maybe they can move around a little bit in the sense of like where your needs are in that particular moment. Like if your spouse has been away for a few weeks and they come home and you're like, I need acts of service because I've been alone with the kids for several weeks. Like, I know some people whose husbands are away and they crave that. They crave their, not only their spouse's physical presence, but also their action in the family. And for myself, through our discussion on our date day, I discovered that my primary love language is words of affirmation, which it kind of surprised me. But then when I started to reflect on it, it really made sense. Just as much as Gare is talking about physical touch being his top love language and this connection with sports, and his connection with like physical objects, like needing to have like, I don't know, love existing in the physical world. For me, I love almost exists in the language world. How else to describe it? It's a little bit more, not theoretical. It's, what's that word?
Intellectual.
Intellectual. There we go. So I need to kind of grasp it with my mind. And I just look at my own activities. Like I love writing. And it gives me a lot of pleasure to sit down and write, poetry or whatever. And, if somebody expresses to me in words how they feel about me, it's really meaningful. And I remember it. I think about all my closest friends are all people who have told me in some way how much they care about me being in their life. And that kind of has cinched the relationship for me with them. It's told me like, this is somebody who feels that I'm meaningful to them. And like when we're out or when we do something, like I'd love to ask Gare afterwards, like, what are you thinking? Like, how did you feel? And what was that experience like for you? Because it's, for me, it's fascinating hearing other people's stories and also helps me feel closer to them. On the flip side, like I'm more sensitive to criticism. So I've kind of like thinking back like, oh yeah, that like word of criticism, like kind of threw me off for so long and it took me a long time to grapple with it. So I think just being aware that words of affirmation is my primary love language makes me aware that I am sensitive to words, just period. And it seems like it should have been obvious to me, but it is more obvious to me now that I've kind of like an objective look at it with through the quiz. Mm-hmm. And I would also like suggest we did the quiz out loud with each other. And I think that was helpful. Just hearing, like for example, what are some questions in the quiz? Like, do you prefer, or my wife can tell me when I'm tired and she's good about asking how she can help. It doesn't matter where we go. I just like going places with my wife. And then you choose one of the two. And so it's like you're splitting hairs a little bit, but it's interesting to hear for myself, to hear your answers, Gare, and see like, which do you prefer in that circumstance? Would you prefer that I got you a gift or would you prefer that we spent quality time?
Mm-hmm. And it's also can be really useful just to get like, say, external verification on some, particularly if you, like, I know when we went through this together, there'd be come up on one and I'd read it out loud. And Jocelyn just started laughing right away because it's very obvious to her that I'm definitely one over the other. Yeah.
Sometimes it was very obvious. Sometimes it was like, wow, what is he going to choose? And then I was kind of surprised by the answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a fun, if you haven't done this before, it's a fun little date game to play with your, with your significant other. It's very short. It's not some like 200 question monstrosity.
No, quick. Not as long as a temperament one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thanks for tuning in. We apologize that this episode went a little bit long, but we had a lot of ground to cover, and we hope that the content herein is meaningful and can really help you improve your marriage, improve your family, and help you live your best life.
Thanks for joining us for this episode on the Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman.
We hope that you've picked up some practical tips that can help you in your marriage and your relationship. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can reach us at gnjshow.com.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review us on the podcast app you're using to listen to us right now. This will help us to reach new audiences.
Once again, I'm Gerhard.
And I'm Jocelyn, and you're listening to the G&J Show.
Until next time, keep smiling.